Studio B Live.
This is Studio B Live, brought to you by Long Lane Honeybee Farms. I'm your host, David Burns. Good to be along with you for the next few minutes today, talking about everything to do with beekeeping, what it's like to be a beekeeper, how our bees are doing, and we're going to have a good time today with a lot of good things to talk about. And this is a fun time when we can just share our lives with you. Sherry and I love to share with you what's going on with our bees, what's going on with all the hives that we manufacture, the woodenware equipment, and just the fun things that we're enjoying about being beekeepers, hopefully inspiring you to either be a beekeeper or to continue to be a beekeeper, or if you're keeping bees already, to keep a whole bunch of more hives. We really need our bees. That's one of the things that has really inspired Sherry and I to really promote beekeeping, is that we really need our honeybees. We need more beekeepers. You know, the day used to be, oh, I can remember back and hear people talk about how almost every house out in the country many, many, many years ago always had a beehive, always had some bees where they always had honey on the table, and it was kind of the sweetener, the country sweetener. And I know many of you have told me about how your grandfather or great-grandfather or even maybe your dad kept bees, and how much you enjoyed so much keeping, watching your grandpa keep bees and enjoying the honey that always sat out on the table. It's just a lot of fun. And unfortunately, you know, that's not so much the case anymore. I get asked all the time, the number one question that I get asked so much, oh my, Sherry and I sold honey at a display on Saturday, and everybody that came up, the predominant question was, are our bees hurting? I heard all the bees are dying. I heard it's really bad, colony collapse disorder. What's going on with the bees? Is it really true? And we answer that question over and over again. And I'm no scientist, you know. I can't really, nobody knows. I mean, not even the scientists that are working around the clock, they don't even really know what CCD is, what it's made of. But one thing I do know is this, and this is what I tell people. You know, bees have always, as of late, been on the decline, honeybees, and that's because several reasons. We have a lot of environmental factors, such as increased pesticides that are killing bees, just urbanization, how cities are just, you know, gobbling up the country, and there's less places for bees to be doing what they do in the natural. And then along late 1980s, early 1990s, we had the introduction of the mites that wiped out almost all of the feral hives, the wild hives, in the woods. And so that left most of the beehives that we have now in America are kept by beekeepers in beehive boxes. So that combined with the other stressors that are placed on bees, such as, like I said, environment, the pesticides, they are a wonderful creature, a wonderful animal. I know they're an insect, but they're in the animal kingdom. They need our protection. They need our help. And we need them. They need us. And that's why we're trying to encourage more people to keep bees. Hey, think about this. Let's say, you know, I don't know how many hives there are in America. I can't imagine. I'm sure that number exists somewhere. I'll have to find it, or maybe you can tell me. Here in Illinois, we have about 20,000 hives in Illinois. And of those 20,000 hives, they are kept by, I think, around 1,500 beekeepers. But let's break America down a little bit. Let's say that America only has 10 hives. And let's say that hives are dying at a rate of, you know, half a year, 50%. You know, that's a dangerous situation, because that means next year we're only going to have 5 hives. And the year after that, 2.5 hives. See what I'm saying? So I think the easiest way to turn this thing around is for more people to become beekeepers. The more people we add, the more hives that we get going, then if we do have die-outs, which, you know, they're animals die, we have a balance. We have more coming in. And I got to tell you, I really hate to address CCD because, as I said, I don't know. I don't have a clue. But I will tell you this. In Illinois, this is my home state of Illinois, we have had no reports of CCD. It's just not happening. And I also know from what other entomologists have told me is that there's more hysteria surrounding CCD than what is actually CCD. Now, they're cautious to say it does exist, there is a problem, but they're also kind of, some of them are also skeptical about believing everything you hear. For example, you might have heard that CCD, at the rate it's going, will soon wipe out all the bees, and before long we won't have any bees left. That's an assumption, first of all. There's a lot of assumptions. People say CCD means the bees are leaving, they're dying. Well, really, the only thing we can verify is the bees are leaving. No one has ever found where the bees are going. They're not laying out in front of the hive dead. And we also have to admit that in most cases where we see CCD, the bees are oftentimes being transported. They're actually being used for pollination, and they're on a diet of a particular kind of nectar for a certain amount of time. Maybe they'll go into the almonds for a few weeks, and then they'll be trucked over to, you know, the apples for a few weeks. So their diet is different than what you see a stable hive in someone's backyard or in a tree. Someone once said to me, they said, you know, if you ate fries, French fries, all week long for 2 weeks, and then you were moved over, and then you started eating Pop-Tarts for another 2 weeks, and then another 2 weeks you were over here, you know, you would have a pretty unhealthy lifestyle. And sometimes that's what our bees face. And I believe, and I could be wrong, it's just my opinion, but in my opinion, CCD is caused by a number of stressors that are placed on the bees. And I think the stressors include pesticides that, and I'm not talking necessarily about the ones that are being sprayed, but I'm talking about the ones that beekeepers are putting into their hives. I believe, and as you have heard me say, when you put a lot of antibiotics in your beehives, your bees kind of get hooked on needing this antibiotic. They don't develop their own antibiotics. Their immune systems are weakened. And then I also believe that medication, whether it's controlling mites or whether it's antibiotics, that medication does get absorbed in the comb. We know that to be true. And then when those combs in the hive get so saturated with the odors of all this medication or the traces of this medication, I just don't think the bees like it anymore. I mean, that's just my opinion. I don't think it's cell phones. I don't think it's radio towers or highline wires. And I'm not too convinced that it's pollution in the air. The bees are forgetting how to fly home. I really think it's how bees are being managed today, the stressors that are placed on these bees, and they're just abandoning these hives. Because when I talk to beekeepers in backyards that are practicing natural ways of keeping bees, you just aren't hearing about CCD. And by the way, CCD, the actual way that CCD behaves, the symptoms of it, has been around a long time, 1800s or early 1900s. You read reports about it. It was often called the fall dwindle disease. The same characteristics back in the 60s. It kind of comes and goes. It's not surprising to me that it may be the very same thing that we see happening to bees over the years. But I am convinced, and again, I could be wrong, but I'm convinced that if you keep bees properly, if you don't use any medication, if you find natural ways to keep bees, you rotate your comb out every 3 years so you don't have old comb in there, then I believe really you're going to have healthy bees. Now, I know they're animals. You're going to run into problems occasionally that even if you do all the things right, natural as you can be, I know that problems can still happen. But I'm saying let's eliminate some of the things that we know are not good for bees anymore. I remember back when Checkmite is a Kumafos type medication, Checkmite strips, everybody was saying, man, you got mites, you got to put the Checkmite strips in your hives. And, you know, people did that. And I found beekeepers leaving those in accidentally. I saw beekeepers serving or extracting honey with these Checkmite strips in their hives. It's a very poisonous chemical. It's not good for the bees over an extended a long time. It's not good for people. But then I also began hearing reports that these Checkmite strips can actually cause, or allegedly, they cause problems with the reproductivity in the drone and in the queen. They can start affecting the whole hive. So sometimes these medications that we think are the answer has come with a high price. But that's one of the top questions people ask me is, aren't bees dying? Aren't they doing bad? Well, I got to tell you, we have a supplier that we sell packaged bees from out of Georgia. And he has 14,000 hives. Last year, I think he had 7,000. He's doubled. Somebody's doing something right when they have that many hives that continue to go on year after year and the bees are doing fine. So again, it's all in how you manage your bees, how healthy they stay. And that's what we're about, trying to get you to keep bees, have fun doing it, be as natural as you can. You know, we're not anti-medication. If you're ordered by your state inspector to use medication on your hive, you need to follow their recommendations. But we're saying that if you don't have to, don't do it. When I'm healthy, I'm not taking antibiotics, right? All right. So that's our take on it. Okay, we have an email today that comes to us. Looks like it comes from Australia. And the only reason I say that, Chris from Australia writes, good day is a G and a hyphen and a day, like good day, good day. Can't say it like our Aussie friends do, but good day. David and Sherry, I love your website and Studio B Live. I'm just getting started with my first hive in Brisbane. Is that how you say that? Brisbane, Australia. And found your site really informative. Keep up the good work. My question for your show is, have you ever used the plastic one-piece frames very often, and what are their advantages and disadvantages compared to wooden frames with foundation? Cheers, guys. Dr. Chris Turnbull. Well, thanks for the kind comments, Doctor, and thank you for writing us. We really appreciate it a lot. And it's good to talk to someone from Australia, and I'm thankful that you're listening, too. And we count it a privilege to answer your question today. This is a very good question, and it's almost asked as often as the one about are bees dwindling. Among beekeepers, there is a huge kind of tension that exists between those who are so accustomed to wood frames with wax foundation versus those who really enjoy the one-piece plastic frames. Now, I always kind of wrestle with how to answer that question because I want to be careful. I want to give good advice. But I'll tell you, the best way to answer the question is from my own experience. Now, we have about 50 hives, and in those 50 hives, we have a strong mixture of everything. We have probably a pretty close even number of the wooden frames versus the one-piece plastic frames. And I'll just be honest with you, my bees love the one-piece plastic frames. They don't really seem to care one bit. Now, I think the tension exists because many years ago, probably up to about, 15, 20 years ago, primarily beekeepers used wooden frames, and we put the wax foundation in those frames, and we had to put wires, across the wax so it wouldn't droop. We had to use little pins to hold the wax up. We had little wedge bars that we would tap into the top of the frame to hold the wax, the little wire clips at the top. And all winter long, we would sit around and clean out the old frames and scrape and rewire. Never again will I do that. I'm sorry. I have found that since my bees love the plastic foundation so well, sometimes we use plastic foundation in a wood frame. And Maybe I should make this section the equipment section. Yeah, let's do that. I'm fixing to answer equipment question. So let's make this our segment on equipment. But so before I answer the question anymore, we should play my little sound bite on equipment in the hive. So let me do that, and I'll be right back. And now it's time for equipment, beekeeping equipment. Hey, I'm talking here. This is when I introduce beekeeping equipment. I need you to, hold the sawing down. Hey, I know you're working. All right. Okay, beekeeping equipment. Well, that's what it sounds like in the shop where we manufacture our beehives all day long, and we have a joy doing that. Hey, I want to get back to the answering the question from the doctor about which frames are better, the one-piece plastic or the wooden frames. And, again, I just want to say that side by side, the bees really don't seem to care. And that's what we have found in our operation. You'll have many people tell you just the opposite. Oh, they won't pull the plastic out as good. They won't pull it out as evenly, and the queens won't lay as good. Now, I found this, and we raise queens. My queens lay better on the one-piece plastic frames than they do anything else. That one-piece plastic frame is just super, and I really enjoy it. I enjoy using it. You would think it would get brittle maybe or break inside the hive. It certainly is a lot stronger to me than wood is. When I start prying wood frames in the hive with a hive tool and the propolis has it stuck, you know, really solid, I can often chip corners off my wood frames with my hive tool. But with that plastic frame, I really do enjoy it. I use a mixture of both simply because mainly that's available to me. I don't see any difference between the two. But I would challenge everyone listening who's still kind of hanging on to the old traditional wood frame and the wax foundation, I would challenge you to do your own experiment. You know, buy a mixture of both, see how they do, compare it, see if you really see a difference. These frames, these one-piece plastic frames, we sell them, people buy them, people produce a lot of honey in them, they're good. And they are beeswax coated, 100% beeswax coated, and the bees like it a lot. And you're going to like it too. I think as a beekeeper, you'll find a much easier way in our hectic society to keep bees than trying to always clean out your frames or re-wax, put new foundations in. These things are guaranteed for 10 years. I'm on the phone weekly with the gentleman that manufactures these frames, Nick out of California. And I'll try to get him on as an interview one time. He's out traveling over the next couple of weeks and won't be back until December. This would have been a good time to interview Nick, but he can tell you about the ways that beekeepers are really loving these one-piece plastic frames. We love them. So there you go. I would say go for it, enjoy them. I really think your bees are going to like it. I spray them with sugar water when I first put them into the hive to introduce them into the hive, just so the bees kind of take to it a little quicker by eating the sugar off of it. They do great. You'll like it. Hey, thanks for writing. Appreciate your email, doctor. And I want to encourage all of you out there, love to answer your questions. Your questions and my answers will help so many people who are asking the same question, right? Yeah, so there you go. And email me at david@honeybeesonline.com for your question, and we'll answer it on our broadcast. That's david@honeybeesonline.com. And now it's time for Back in History. Well, one of the first books that I began looking at when I became interested in beekeeping is a very popular book and one that's still in print today, although it's been revised a lot over the years. It is a book by A.I. Root, And the title of it is ABC and XYZ of B Culture. And it has so many good articles in it, good information. What I like about it is it's alphabetical. And so you can look up, you know, if you're looking up Queens, you can go to the Q section. It's real handy. And I've actually had several of these, of this particular book. I've purchased the different, editions based on the year. And the one that I have in front of me here is, looks like it's a 1978 edition. So you would learn a lot about bees from this edition, but I don't think you'd learn anything about mites because that was not a problem here in America until the late 1980s, early 1990s. I'm looking here quickly to see if it does say anything about mites, but there's no Zima disease, so you know, that's... Let's see here. So you'll just have to, you know, if you get a copy of this maybe off eBay or off the Internet, or if you buy a new copy, it depends on what year it is, what is actually, how current it's going to be with new information that is pertaining to bees today. And I do not see mites listed alphabetically. Good pictures in it, and I love it. It's just a great all-around book about beekeeping. And again, the author's name is A.I. Root, and the name of the book is ABC and XYZ of Bee Culture. It's a big one. It's like at least 2.5 inches thick. Of course, mine may be thicker because it looks like I left it out on a dewy night somewhere, and it got a little wet. I wanted to go back in history. This is our history section. Because the author of this book is just a hero of all beekeepers, A.I. Root. And A.I. Root was an exceptional individual that I want to share his life with you over the next few days, or at least today and tomorrow. We'll talk about his life and what he did to contribute to beekeeping is really phenomenal. And his name, A.I., is actually abbreviation for Amos Ives. His name was Amos Ives Root. And he lived in the late 1800s, early 1900s. In fact, he was born in 1839. He lived until 1923. I think that's 84 years old. And he was a beekeeper in the United States. He lived in Ohio. He lived around the area, and I think actually he lived in Medina, Ohio, is where he started he started beekeeping in his 20s as a hobby, and then it expanded. It became a business, and he created the business that is called the A.I. Root Company. He also was he wrote about bees. He wrote and published a trade journal called Gleanings in Bee Culture. It's a very well sought after journal even today, buying the historical issues. People love to get those. He's also an interesting person because during the time of his life, the Wright brothers, you know, had their start there in Ohio. And actually, A.I. Root was the only one who wrote about the Wright brothers. Well, how do I word that? I was reading Wikipedia here, and they say it this way. They say that his wide-ranging interest and curiosity led him to become the only eyewitness to publish articles about successful airplane flights made by the Wright brothers in Ohio in 1904 and 1905. And Wikipedia has a lot of information about Mr. Root in it. Talks about his company and how he was. I was fascinated by this because I think it was in this article they said that in his bee company he made beehives and beekeeping equipment. The company in its heyday shipped 4 railroad freight cars of beekeeping equipment a day. four railroad freight cars of beekeeping equipment left his facility every day. That is fascinating. Wow. A real neat individual. And we have so much to thank him for. And let me get back to that Wikipedia article. I wanted to share with you a little bit about what they said about his contribution. They really painted him up very nicely. It says, Amos Ives Root developed innovative beekeeping techniques in the United States during the mid-1800s, a period when the industry played an important role in the economy of many communities. He founded his own company, which continues in business to present day, and it does. His wide range of interests and curiosity led him to become the only eyewitness to publish articles about the successful flights made by the Wright brothers in Ohio in 1904 and 1905. And it says that he continued to operate his business. But now, I read ahead here, and it says now he actually, the company is still owned by his great-grandson. And that now they simply and only make candles. In 1928, the company began a transition into candle making after a local priest made a request for high-quality liturgical candles. And so now the company still exists. In fact, they're still in their same building. They renovated the original old brick building. I think it's well over 100 years old. And they've renovated that building there in Medina, Ohio. And I don't know, maybe one day I'll tour that. But I wanted to share an article. A good friend of our family was at a garage sale. And she happened to find some old magazines, you know, the American Bee Journal from 1937. Wow. This, I've got a copy here. It's a February 1937 copy of the American Bee Journal. And it's in great shape. It's amazing how good a quality it is. And let's see, if it's in this article, it's in this one or the other one. Let me check. Maybe in the August. I've got a February copy and an August copy. And let's see here. It has an article in it by A.I. Root talking about his life and his business. And I was fascinating reading it. And I want to, actually, this is part two. And I don't have part one because I don't have that magazine. But I do want to read a little bit here. Lives of Famous Beekeepers is the article by Kent Pellet from Iowa. And I'll just read you a portion of what he says about A.I. Root. And keep in mind that this is written in August of 1937. A.I. Root's mother was very devout. In addition to her extreme honesty, her devotion was a characteristic that stood out above all others in her life. When a boy, he often awakened at night to hear her praying. Young Amos had no more interest in religion than the average boy, and often he went to Sunday school and church only under duress. As he grew older, he inclined to turn skeptic. He fell under the influence of Ingersoll and Payne. First his mother and then his wife prayed for him to return to the fold. It was a struggle, thinking young men of the day had to face the apparent conflict between the faith of the fathers and the new reason that was capturing the minds of men. Root always had been possessed of a violent temper. Under his financial worries and his struggling to establish his business, he drove his frail body to do the work of several men. His temper so often got out of hand that he was worried and sought some way to get a grip on himself. He decided on religion as the way to self-control. He cast out Ingersoll and Payne and gave himself unreservedly to the Lord Jesus Christ. The churches in Medina had union meetings. He went there to declare his newfound faith. He sat through the meeting the first evening, trembling in the pew, without the courage to rise and speak. On the way home, he was thrown into agitation for fear something might happen to him before he could make known his faith. The next evening, he was first on his feet. He said, I have been all my life a busy man. I hope to be a busy man still, but I am resolved to be busy in God's work first and my own afterward. Root let the world know at once about his conversion. He soon was teaching a Sunday school class in a little red schoolhouse 5 miles from Medina in a neighborhood where there were several saloons, but where hitherto there had been no Sunday school. He lured young ruffians into his class. One barefoot giant went to hear him, and he tamed some of them and at length broke to the influence of the saloons on the community. Every Sunday morning he conducted a religious service in the Medina County Jail, often to the discomfiture of the inmates. He took drunkards from the jail, put them to work in his bee factory, and at times succeeded in making hard-working temperament men of them. He quite occasionally found his help this way, until people grumbled that the only way to get a job with Root was to be a drunkard or a jailbird. He established a daily prayer service at his factory. He added several pages to Gleanings in order to conduct a department which he called Our Homes, where he forgot about bees and preached to his readers about what was at the moment nearest his heart, usually religion or morals, but sometimes his latest hobby. Perhaps strawberries. Often he added extra pages when the hobby took up more room than usual, so readers would not feel they were cheated. Root never dropped the Our Homes department. It ceased to be a part of Gleanings only at the time of his death, 30 years after he had turned the rest of the magazine over to his son Ernest. Root carried on a crusade against the tobacco habit among his readers. Bee smokers were not then in general use. Beekeepers complained that they had to smoke in order to keep their bees under control. So he offered to send a bee smoker free of charge to any beekeeper who would sign a pledge never to smoke again. The pledges were published in Gleanings, sometimes a dozen in an issue. One of the clerks protested that the number of smokers sent out would run into an appalling figure. Root said, "The Lord will find a way." 1,000 smokers were given away, and 1,000 people signed the pledges. So there's a little bit of the article from 1937 American Bee Journal, August edition, starting on page 380. If you have those old copies, you can pick up the article and read it. I'll read some more in the next few days about lives of famous beekeepers, and today we're talking about A.I. Root. Well, everyone who keeps bees probably is expecting some honey, and that's why we're beekeepers. For the most part, we're expecting those little girls that go out foraging to bring back lots of good honey that we can extract it and bottle it and sell it. And even if we don't make a living off of our honey, at least we take a little pride in knowing that we provided a great tasting natural sweetener onto the tables of people who love honey everywhere. But it's not always as easy as we might think in selling our honey. In fact, some beekeepers find it rather difficult marketing and selling their honey. Well, that's one of the things we've never had a difficult challenge with here at Long Lane Honey Bee Farms. We've always found it pretty easy to sell honey, and we have a large customer base that continues to demand more honey than actually we can produce each year. And we're glad about that, because we're glad that we can have a quick way to sell our honey. And I thought it'd be nice for Sherry and I just to share some ideas with you, those of you that are either currently beekeepers producing honey, maybe having a challenge in selling your honey, or those of you who may be wondering, how do I market? How do I sell my honey? Now, here's a common response people say. They say, hey, I'd like to order a hive. I'd like to order some bees. I'm not really doing it to sell honey. I'm just doing it to provide enough honey for my family. Well, you'll find that if you have, you know, 2 or 3 hives, that before long you're having a lot more honey production than you and your family can actually consume. and you feel obligated to share it with other people. So you might as well go ahead and sell it and make a few bucks. So Sherry, as we think about honey and marketing honey, what are some ideas that you want to share with our listeners? Because you kind of take on single-handedly the whole role of marketing our honey and selling our honey. What do you want to share with our listeners today?
Well, actually, I was thinking that this is something that probably could take two or three different times to sit down and talk about it, because it's probably one of the most important things, I think, that beekeepers would need to think through as far as marketing your honey and as far as presentation and selling your honey. And, of course, you always want to encourage everybody to look into their local, if they have any local ordinances or state, county, township rules. What have you found out about where we live?
You mean in regards to processing honey or selling it or what?
I think my first question to you is bottling. What have you found out that our listeners would need to know about just actually bottling? Can we use bottles out of the cabinet? Do I have to buy them? Or are there a certain kind of plastic that I have to get?
Well, I think, you know, for one thing, you do need to check with your local county health department or your state public health department and find out what the regulations are in how you bottle your honey. Honey is usually treated a little bit differently than you would find food manufacturers, you know, like a company making ketchup, because they're actually mixing ingredients and so forth, where honey is usually pretty close to the same category as what you would find in farmers markets, like tomatoes and corn, because honey is not altered by the beekeeper. You know, it's just simply filtered and bottled. And I think you just have to use real good common sense when you're bottling honey. And that is, you do want to, you know, find bottles that are very clean. You want to have washed them, dried them, whatever it takes to make sure there's no dirt or debris or dust, and that everything is just sanitary as possible before you bottle your honey. So good common sense. I think it's good that, you know, it's good for all people who bottle their honey to wear hair nets like you would see in the common, you know, kitchen of a restaurant or something. You wear their hair nets. You might even want to wear, you know, gloves, whatever it takes just to make sure that you do have a real clean product.
Also, I don't think anybody coming onto your property to buy honey would like the idea that you just pulled a mayonnaise jar, you know, out of the cabinet, even though you might be the most sanitary person in the world and maybe you ran that through the dishwasher. I just think that, you know, just a regular person probably wouldn't like the idea of something like that. So you have to take in consideration what kind of bottles that you're going to use. But we, the cheapest ones for us are to buy the canning jars. And you can buy the canning jars, you know, just like what the ladies use for, you know, jams and jellies or to can the green beans or whatever. And you buy those by the dozen, and it, the cheapest places to get those are like Big Lots and Walmart and those kind of discount stores. We actually went to a, what was it called, like a Family Dollar store one time, and they were just trying to get rid of them at the end of summer. And we got like a dozen for, was it like $1 or $2 or something like that. So if you keep your eye open for the sales, those really are the best way. And I think people like the way those look, those glass canning jars. They really, really like it. Now, you know, if it's you're just putting it together for your friends or folks at church, use your mayonnaise jars or your, you know, pickle jars or whatever you have at home, because, you know, those folks don't mind. Or you might even want people to bring their own jars, you know, to fill at your house.
Now, Sherry, do you think that glass is more expensive or cheaper than plastic?
Well, if you get the bottle, the canning jars that I was talking about, those are far cheaper than any, you know, it's hard just to go into a store and buy anything plastic. It really is. If you're going to get plastic, you need food-grade plastic. And so you're going to have to buy those from a bottling company. Now, you can buy them from some of the, you know, the really big be business places. You can buy the plastic, or you can go to an actual bottling company, and those can be found on the internet through a simple search. And I think you might find that they're cheaper if you buy them from an actual bottling company. But it needs to be food-grade plastic. I would not clean out your milk jugs and try to reuse them. You know, those kinds of things. I just probably really wouldn't do that. And, of course, we know that there are some concerns about plastic out there nowadays. So you might want to do your research as far as what kind of plastic you have. But if you're going to buy food grade from a bottling company, you can rest assured that it's probably the right kind of plastic to use.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I would normally think that in my mind, I would think plastic would be cheaper to purchase because it seems like it's thinner and lighter than glass. But that's not the case. It seems like that when you buy these glass canning jars, they are a cheaper way. And plastic is expensive, isn't it? But, you know, I don't know. I look at our – most of what we sell are in plastic containers. We do sell a lot in the quart-size glass canning jars. But most of what we sell is plastic. And I don't know. I'm not crazy about plastic. When I was a kid, I bought all my honey in glass, and I liked it. But it seems like sometimes the plastic doesn't provide the real clear appearance because there's a little bit of, you know, haziness in the plastic jar itself. And so the honey doesn't always appear to be real clear as it does in glass. But for no other reason, we just basically use plastic because it's available. One of the things I think before you saved money, what you're talking about, Sherry, I looked at it once and called some of those bottle companies and you've got to buy thousands of bottles. I mean, if you want 10, you're not going to get a very good break. You know, they're going to kill you. So, but bottling is really important in how the appearance of the bottle looks. Sometimes some of our customers bring back the glass bottles, you know, with their labels kind of washed off and everything. And those are tough to reuse or to relabel, aren't they? But they're trying to be kind, you know, and recycle, I guess. But how you bottle is important. What would some suggestions be to people who are bottling that they need to be careful about when bottling, making sure it looks good?
Well, when we bottle out of a big, what is this called over here?
Stainless steel tank.
How much does it hold?
It probably holds, it's not a lot, 300 pounds of honey maybe.
300 pounds. Well, we have a huge tank out in the honey room.
That's 500 gallons.
500 gallons out there, but we bring it in by buckets into the smaller stainless steel that actually sits in our store, and it's nice to have it in the store, and people always are like, oh, is that where your honey is? But it has a explain to the folks what the spigot is.
Well, it's a stainless steel valve, and it's called a dripless valve. And if you've ever bottled honey, honey drips. I mean, it seems like you can't get the last drop because there's always another drop. But this valve is one that you operate. It fills your bottles nicely. And then as soon as you turn the valve off, you know, it doesn't just continue to drip. It seals the drip pretty fast.
But it will drip.
It does, doesn't it? It's kind of, yeah, if you can catch the last one, you're okay. But if you kind of get in a hurry, it will, that last little drip will drip off.
Okay, well, we bottle using the stainless steel tank. But before we got it, we would bring the honey in 5-gallon buckets. And the 5-gallon buckets, you can get a valve to put on those 5-gallon buckets, just a plastic valve. And you can find that, you know, almost anywhere. But you'd open up that valve, and I would fill up a half-gallon pitcher, you know, like you use for tea or lemonade or something like that. I would fill up the pitcher, and then I would take the pitcher and very quickly fill up, you know, however many bottles I was filling up.
Yeah, I guess I'll say something here because, you know, if you're a very, very small beekeeper, then you basically just have 5, 10, 15, you know, 50 gallons of honey that you're dealing with each year. And you do find very simple ways to do it. You know, you kind of get the old T-shirt out of the drawer. You strain it once through a clean T-shirt. You know, you've got all your wife's Tupperware dishes out there, and you keep pushing it around from here to there. But as you get larger, you keep trying to find ways to bottle easier. And we're more on the side of easy, but it's still not down pat the way we want it. You know, large beekeeping people that are doing thousands of hives, they have all the automated fillers where, you know, honey is pumped to the large tank, it goes to a settling tank, it goes to these big, then another tank that it pumps out of there into a filler where you just, it's, what am I trying to say? They just set it for, you know, 2 pounds and it instantly squirts 2 pounds into a jar and it's all automated. We're somewhere in between. So we still have to find ourselves, you know, toting our honey around. But one of the things we found is you do need to let your honey settle for about a week. And that makes a much better flavor. The air bubbles kind of work up to the top. Most beekeepers get in way too big of a hurry to bottle. And they get a lot of air in their honey. So it is important how you fill it. But Sherry's right. You can be as simple as, you know, taking it, putting it in a gallon Tupperware, like a tea container, and just pouring it out of that into your bottles.
And then once you start bottling, it's really important that, you know, of course you've already got it filtered. You've got, you know, any stray material that might have been in there out of it. But when you go to fill, and again, you're using brand new jars or you have washed and sterilized whatever you've used in the past, and you fill them up with the honey, and you make sure that you fill the jars clear up into the neck of the jar, so that when you put the lid down, you don't see a gap between the honey and the lid. That always seems to trigger to people that maybe you're trying to, you know, cheat them out of an ounce or two. And we actually, and I think you said this on one of your programs, we actually went somewhere not too long ago where there was a beekeeper who had sold it to a grocery store,
yeah,
and he had not filled up the jars into the neck. It was way, you know, way down. What am I trying to say?
Yeah, you know, and that is, you know, Sherry, we looked into that, and he technically was filling only by volume, by weight. Mm-hmm. So that was like a 3-pound mm-hmm. container. Now, I would blame the container maker because the container maker made him, I mean, when he put 3 pounds of honey in there, it landed between where the jar started to curve and where the neck and the lid was. So it looked like it wasn't all the way filled. And to me, it surprises me that anybody would make a honey container and call it a 3-pound honey container and force, because, you know, we've done that too, and we've had to fill it. We've had to give people extra weight of honey, extra volume, just to make it up to the top of the container.
Yeah. Well, it might not have been a honey jar manufacturer.
Right.
He might have found those someplace else. And typically, you do sell honey by the pound. So he filled it up to the 3-pound mark, which was not into the neck, and he sold it by the 3 pounds. But if that had been me, I would have filled it up all the way. I would have measured each one and either charged exactly what 3 pounds and 3 ounces cost,
mm-hmm.
or I would have said, you know, it's 3 pounds, and we throw a couple of ounces in for good measure, like a baker's dozen is 13 cookies. And, you know, that's what I would have done, because it just, the presentation did not look good.
Yeah, according to weight and measures, you do have to put the exact, you know, volume in there, weight, or like ounces and pounds. You have to put it exactly, and that's what we've done. You can buy inexpensive weighing or scales and put your honey on there and clear it out, you know, the bottle weight, and then you just figure out what 3 pounds is, or 3.3, to fill it up to the top of the neck. It is kind of confusing, but I agree with Sherry. In fact, you know, when you go into the competition and you take it to the state fairs, your honey, and, you know, they require that the bottle be filled all the way up to 1/8 inch below the top of the bottle. So they're very particular about that. And the next thing that I want to talk about, Sherry, is that you don't want a lot of floaty things when the customer opens the top of the bottle and looks in there and sees what they don't know, you know, maybe it's air bubbles, maybe it's small grains of pollen or something, which we saw, but at the gentleman that you're talking about. And that's all done away with if you bottle it and store your honey correctly. And if you have a settling tank or a way, you know, to buy a tank like Sherry just mentioned that we do, we actually let it sit twice, and in that final settling tank, all the air bubbles, everything floats to the top, and we only bottle off the bottom. So that makes a real pure product. Even when you bottle, there's nothing that's going to float to the top of the bottle that you're bottling. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to go back to something for just a minute. This stainless steel tank that we have sitting in here in our store, I forgot to mention that one reason why it's in the store, well, we built the store, one of the reasons was so that we could bottle in a very specialized area. But it's nice to have it in the store because people can bring in their own jars or their own jugs and fill them up themselves. But it's also kind of a selling point because if you wanted to have very special bottles, you could even have an array of different specialty bottles, and you could let somebody come in and pick which bottle they wanted and let them fill it themselves, and it would make a really nice gift item to do something like that.
That's good.
So after you've bottled it and it does look...
Hey, before you go on, can you reach over there and turn that heater off? Are you hot?
No.
I'm hot. There.
There.
I thought you would. I thought you'd be hot, but I've got this sweatshirt on. I'm sweating. That's like, wow. All right.
So you have to label every bottle. Now, tell us again what has to be on the label.
Oh, you know, I've forgotten. Okay. I did go to the course by the public health department, and you know, I guess if you probably don't have it exactly correct, they won't throw the book at you and haul you off. But you know, it's just their standard recommendation of. It really gets ridiculous. I mean, where the font is, how big the font has to be.
Seriously?
Yeah, and where the weight and measure has to appear, blah, 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 you know. But the way we get around it is very simple. We simply go to honey labeling places that do this so they know where to put all that information. And all we have to do is write in the weight at the location. You know, I think really you have to have your name. And you have to, one thing that you have to have now is you have to, it has to say made in the USA or from the USA, from America. It has to say that. I don't know. That's kind of a new thing. We used to not have to do that, but we do now. But you do have to have your name and maybe a contact number, or at least an address, something like that. And then the weight is the big thing too. You do not have to have the, well, if you sell it like a farmer's market or, you know, it yourself, you don't have to have that nutritional value sticker on the back. But I think if you sell it to larger companies, that's required. You can buy those. I mean, honey stays the same. The content of it is the same. Then you can purchase those nutritional value labels for your honey jars if you really want to look professional. And you can just stick those on there, too. And one of the labels that I kind of like, Sherry, that we don't always do is the one that says, all honey will granulate, crystallize over time, you know. I love those labels because people that are brand new to honey and don't know much about honey, they may not understand why their honey is getting thick, and they may think it's sour, they may think it's wrong, spoiled, but that's not true at all. And so it's important to either tell your customers that or put that label on there with instructions. They make a label that you can put on there, and it says all honey crystallizes, and to liquefy it again, simply leave it in a warm room or, you know, place your jar in hot water or something like that. So that's helpful.
I'm reading off a paper here, and it's stuck to the top of your counter.
Yeah, I don't know how honey got up here. It just goes to show honey gets everywhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so these labels, like David said, can be purchased at places where they make these labels, and you can usually pick out, you know, there's like 10 different designs, and you can pick out which design. But a lot of people are really going to getting their own labels designed, And
those people don't make profit off their honey, then, do they? Is that expensive?
I don't know.
It's
met a designer this weekend at a bazaar that we were working at, and he would be the guy to go to and ask to design labels for us.
Yeah, he was interesting because he was drawing, how do you say that word? I always mess it up.
Caricatures.
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 Yeah, caricatures. You know, the little cartoonists, like you see political figures kind of exaggerated, you know. That's what he was drawing. And he was set up right next to our honey booth, and we said, hey, Dan, why don't you do me and Sherry? And I'm going to produce a lesson probably tomorrow. And I'm going to include that caricature drawing in that lesson. I took a picture of it. It was pretty good. I thought it looked more like me. I don't know. You didn't look like yourself or something.
It was so pretty. I thought it was so pretty.
Well, you're pretty. And the drawing
was... You say pretty.
Pretty? 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 Pretty is my southern voice. Now, you're pretty, and the drawing was of a pretty lady, but the two pretty ladies didn't look the same.
I didn't think you looked like you. But
no, they messed up. Okay. He didn't mess. Well, he wasn't painting a portrait.
No, it was a caricature.
It was really funny because one grandma took her little son there, and then she was like spitting on his hair, licking his hair down. And Sherry was like, hey, it's a caricature drawing. You know, it's not a portrait here. But anyway, people like that. He's a design artist, and he could probably work up a nice label. And
right,
you could take it somewhere. You can go to these office stores anymore. Wow, they make the greatest things for nothing, don't they? We get all of our business cards and everything done there.
Yeah, and you need to make sure that, like David said, all the information's on there. You know, we always have Long Lane Honeybee Farms, our name, our address,
website.
Our phone number, our website on there. We weigh each of the containers on a small scale. We write down how much it weighs. And we have a sticker that says what to do if your honey crystallizes. And then on some of the bottles, especially the comb honey, I have a sticker that I need to try to explain this. It's a round sticker, and then there's a long
strip
that comes with it that you roll over the side of your container. So, it makes it look like it's a sealed jobby. It's not. It's just a sticker. But I think people feel better when they see that and think, well, no one's come along. And, because one thing that people do at honey stands is they like to pick stuff up. They like to look at it. I've had to try to keep people, they'll take the lids off the lip balms and smell them. And it's like, no, don't do that. You need to keep your stuff clean. So I think it gives the people the idea that, okay, well, no one's come along and taken the lid off and sniffed at it or something like that. Those are the things that go on the outside of your bottle. Honey is sold by the pound,
mm-hmm.
and so...
Not by the gallons. I mean, we do sell it by the gallons.
Well,
but it's
translated into pounds.
You do have to translate it into pounds, mm-hmm. don't you? Because it's always... You can't think of a gallon of honey equaling a gallon of water by pounds. It's different.
Right.
A gallon of honey usually weighs about 11 pounds. Whereas water is, 9.8 or something? It's a lot less. Honey is heavier. You're listening to Studio B Live, and that's all the time we have for today. We want to encourage you to tune in again tomorrow for another broadcast. We produce these Monday through Friday, anywhere from a half hour to an hour of information about beekeeping. And again, we'd love to hear from you. Send us your questions to david@honeybeesonline.com, david@honeybeesonline.com, or call in. Our call-in line is 217-427-2430. Call in to ask your question today, and we'll play it on the air the next time we have our program. So do remember our website. Check us out, honeybeesonline.com. We'd love to have you stop by and see what we have in store, the information that we have available, and what we have for sale to help you become a beekeeper. We are your one-stop place for all your beekeeping needs. We manufacture all the woodenware And the hive components are right here at our family farm. And then we have great suppliers for all your other needs, whether it's protective clothing, our package bees, and we actually graft and produce our own queens as well right here in central Illinois. We love to talk with you. If you'd like to place an order or talk to us about expanding your bee operation, our order line is 217-427-2678. That's 217-427-2678. We're just not fancy enough to have one of those phones, you know, that says, hi, if you want this, press 1, if this, press 2. So we do it the hard way with two different lines, two different phone numbers, but you can figure it out because you're smart. Hey, we look forward to being with you again next time. Until then, remember to behave yourself.